Hello, Pokeminders!
And welcome to our weekly Pokepod,
where we discuss everything related to mental well-being as well as our journey as a startup.
I'm your host, Yusuf.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And today, we're gonna poke some minds.
Hello, Pokeminders!
And welcome to our weekly Pokepod,
where we discuss everything related to mental well-being as well as our journey as a startup.
I'm your host, Yusuf.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And today, we're gonna poke some minds.
Hello, Pokeminders! Welcome to the Pokepod. I'm your host, Katya. Thank you so much for tuning in. Just as promised, I'd like to take a closer look at personality disorders today. This episode took me longer than expected. I believe this topic is very important, but as I worked on this episode, I realized how tricky it is to figure out where to begin and to end, and which information is actually useful for you. This episode is not about to try and teach you how to, quote-unquote, diagnose someone or yourself. Instead, I want to expand on the idea to be compassionate about yourself and others. Normal actually has a much larger spectrum than what you might think. This means that someone can have a symptom of an illness without having the illness. So I think a good place to start is to define what mental health actually is. According to the WHO, and I'm quoting them here, mental health is a state of mental well-being that enables people to cope with the stresses of life, realize their abilities, learn well and work well, and contribute to their community. It is an integral component of health and well-being that underpins our individual and collective abilities to make decisions, build relationships, and shape the world we live in. Mental health is a basic human right, and it's crucial to personal, community, and socioeconomic development. So mental health is much more than just the absence of mental disorders. It exists on a complex continuum which is experienced differently from one person to the next, with varying degrees of difficulty and distresses, and potentially very different social and clinical outcomes. Mental health conditions include mental disorders and psychosocial disabilities, as well as other mental states associated with significant distress, impairment in functioning, or risk of self-harm. People with mental health conditions are more likely to experience lower levels of mental well-being, but this is not always or necessarily the case. An example could be a diagnosis called adjustment disorder. Adjustment disorder is a diagnosis that involves the development of emotional or behavioral symptoms in response to an identifiable stressor, such as life changes, within a relatively short time frame. These symptoms can lead to distress and impairment in functioning, but may not always indicate a long-term mental health condition. Adjustment disorder recognizes that mental well-being can fluctuate in response to life events and stressors. A mental disorder is also characterized by a clinically significant disturbance in an individual's cognition, emotional regulation, or behavior, often in a social context. Such disturbances may occur as single episodes, maybe persistence, or maybe relapsing remitting. An example here could be bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder involves recurrent episodes of both mania and depression, impacting various aspects of an individual's functioning, including social interactions. These episodes can be persistent and recurrent, causing significant distress and impairment in social and occupational areas of life. Additionally, the disorder can present as a single episode, persistent or relapsing remitting. Personality disorders are a class of mental disorders. Professionals use the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, called DSM-5, or the International Classification of Diseases, called ICD-11, which provide the criteria for diagnosing all mental health conditions. Each personality disorder in the DSM-5 or ICD-11 is described in terms of specific diagnostic criteria, including behavioral patterns, affective features, cognitive patterns, and interpersonal functioning. To receive a diagnosis, an individual must meet the specific number of criteria for a particular disorder. It is also important for the symptoms to cause significant distress or impairment in functioning. Additionally, clinicians must rule out other possible explanations for the symptoms, such as substance abuse or medical conditions. As I talked about in the last episode, personality refers to the unique set of enduring traits, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that make each person who they are. These traits are relatively stable over time and shape how individuals perceive and interact with the world. In contrast, personality disorders are maladaptive patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving that significantly deviate from cultural norms and cause distress or impairment in various areas of life. Unlike normal personality variations, which can be adaptive, personality disorder traits are dysfunctional and interfere with a person's ability to lead a fulfilling life. Treatment for personality disorders typically involves psychotherapy to manage symptoms and improve functioning. People may experience symptoms of a mental disorder but not meet the criteria for a diagnosis. There are a few reasons for that. One reason could be sub-threshold symptoms. That means that individuals may exhibit symptoms that are below the threshold required for formal diagnosis. These symptoms may be present but not severe or frequent enough to fulfill a diagnostic criteria. My favorite example here is OCD or obsessive-compulsive disorder. Someone might like to lock their car by clicking the lock button 3 times. And then they go their way without thinking about it anymore. That behavior, even though repetitive, has no negative impact on their lives and doesn't come with any other symptoms. And therefore, they don't meet the criteria for OCD. But if the same person starts to control if their car is locked for an extended period of time, and this behavior starts to have a negative impact on their overall life and well-being, then it might be time to address and assess the situation. Another reason could be that symptoms are transient, which means that symptoms may be temporary and resolve on their own without persisting for the duration required for a diagnosis. For example, someone might experience occasional episodes of anxiety or low mood that do not meet the criteria for an anxiety disorder or depression. Also, contextual factors need to be taken into account. Symptoms may be attributable to specific circumstances or life events, rather than indicative of an underlying mental disorder. For instance, someone might experience temporary distress or behavioral changes following a breakup or job loss, which may not warrant a diagnosis. There are also individual differences. Variations in personality, temperament, and coping styles can influence symptom expression. Certain behaviors or experiences that may resemble symptoms of a mental disorder could be within range of normal individual differences. Other explanations could be that symptoms may be attributed to factors such as substance abuse, medication side effects, or medical conditions, rather than solely reflecting a primary mental disorder. It's crucial to consider these alternatives when evaluating symptoms. Furthermore, one's developmental stage has to be taken into account. Some behaviors or experiences that might be considered symptomatic in one developmental stage could be appropriate in another. For example, certain behaviors observed in children or adolescents might not signify a mental disorder, but rather reflect a typical developmental challenge. Children and teenagers can be very cruel at times, but for the most, it's part of their development. In these instances, although individuals may be experiencing distress or impairment related to the symptoms, they do not meet the full criteria for a diagnosable mental disorder. However, it's important to monitor symptoms over time, provide support, and intervene if symptoms worsen or significantly impact functioning. Additionally, psychoeducation and coping strategies may be helpful in managing distressing symptoms even in absence of a formal diagnosis. Long story short, even though you might not meet the criteria for a diagnosis, you might still benefit from different coping strategies that can be taught in therapy. Overall, I don't think it's inherently wrong to self-diagnose or to quote-unquote diagnose others, which I will call label from here on out. Setting a label that fits can be useful if it serves as a tool to navigate challenges in life. Before I talk more about some examples to bring my point across, I want to strongly emphasize that the examples I will use exclude any kind of physical violence or any other kind of abuse. Please seek help if you're feeling threatened. I'm talking about out-of-the-ordinary situations that cause distress but aren't dangerous. That being said, let's dive in. As the first example, maybe an individual might have a relative or colleague that comes across as irrational and emotional to them, and it reminds them of a person with a borderline personality disorder. Or they might describe this colleague or relative as a narcissist because this person only looks after themselves and disregards everyone else's needs or wishes. Okay, so if they can't escape the situation for whatever reason, how can they adapt their own behavior with this particular person to make the situations easier or just more tolerable for them in the long run? This might sound harsh now, but bear with me here. In the end of the day, it doesn't really matter that much for that individual's life if the other person has a diagnosis or not. If they have the impression that they are being mistreated, or if someone behaves a certain way that provokes unpleasant feelings within them, then it is very unfortunate. and being mistreated is never okay. But that doesn't mean that the other person has any kind of mental disorder. This fact might very well be reassuring or very worrying to you. I basically come back to my statement, someone can just be an asshole without being a narcissist. So unfortunately, one can change the person in front of them, and by just putting a label on it, it will not make the situation any better. And I cannot stress this enough. It's never okay to be mistreated, and it's very unfortunate if someone is feeling distress in certain situations and with certain people. This shouldn't happen. Ah, there it is. One of the cognitive distortions that loves to pop up in our lives. Tricky little things, but completely normal. As I mentioned in previous episodes, once we can describe a situation and accept reality as it is, we are often able to find a way to deal with the situation in a better way. Remember, it's not about giving in or giving up and feel defeated. It's about finding a different way to help you cope. And the unpleasant feelings might not go away, but hopefully difficult situations become more manageable. The solution might very well be, if necessary, to break contact to this person. But if for some reason the interaction must continue, like having a boss that causes feelings of distress, a label can help an individual to find strategies on how to manage a situation differently. And in that case, I do think that putting a label on someone else can be a good thing. All right, let's take self-diagnosis as a second example. Maybe someone finds themselves having a hard time to focus on tasks, procrastinate, and have a hard time to find and keep a balanced routine, and find similarities to others that have an ADHD diagnosis. And there might be a reason to get an assessment, more on that later. But there are also coping strategies that help people with ADHD that are being taught in therapy to cope with the difficulties better, and you might also benefit from the very same strategies, even without a diagnosis. But what happens when we start to self-diagnose or try to diagnose others close to us? Well, there's a rule that you can't diagnose yourself, family, and friends, or anyone else close to you, and that also applies to any kind of mental health care staff. There's a very simple reason. We can't be objective. And it is normal that we identify ourselves or others within certain symptoms. Something that we often experience is a thing called confirmation bias when heading down the diagnostic rabbit hole. We start to search for, interpret, favor, and recall information in a way that confirms or supports our belief. Within the ADHD example, that could mean that somebody starts researching ADHD symptoms online and find a list of common signs, including forgetfulness, impulsivity, and difficulty concentrating. As they read through the list, they might unconsciously focus more on instances in their life that confirm these symptoms and downplay or ignore other factors that could explain their behavior. For example, they might remember instances where they forgot important appointments, but overlook times when they are able to concentrate well or maintain focus. This confirmation bias reinforces their belief that they have ADHD, as they interpret their experience in a way that aligns with their preconceived notion. And of course, the same applies for diagnosing or labeling others. There's also a risk of attention bias, which means that one's perception is affected by selective factors and it becomes harder to consider alternative possibilities. In the ADHD example, that could mean that after reading about ADHD online and beginning to suspect that they might have it due to experiencing symptoms like difficulty focusing, impulsivity, and restlessness, they become hyper aware of behaviors associated with the disorder. For instance, they might notice movements when they become distracted or have trouble concentrating more frequently, As a result, they start attributing these instances solely to ADHD, possibly overlooking other factors or explanations for their behaviors. So when is it time to seek an assessment for ADHD or other mental health-related diagnoses? In general, it's important to seek help when symptoms persist and are significantly impacting one's daily life, relationships, work, or overall functioning. When symptoms are significantly impacting their ability to perform daily tasks or engage in activities that one once enjoyed. This individual finds it challenging to cope with stress, manage their emotions, or handle life's challenges effectively. A mental health evaluation can help identify underlying issues and provide guidance on appropriate coping strategies or treatment options. Maybe friends, family members, or colleagues may express concerns about their well-being or notice changes in their behavior or mood that they may not have recognized themselves. Maybe there's a family history of mental health issues that might motivate an assessment. Major life events, such as loss, trauma, relationship difficulties, or significant life changes, can trigger or worsen mental health issues. If you're struggling to cope with a recent event, ongoing stressors, or substance abuse, seeking an evaluation can provide support and guidance during challenging times. It's normal that we want to categorize to make our life a bit easier, and I'm all for it to describe a behavior in terms of a diagnosis or label, if it helps you understand a certain behavior better and if it helps you to navigate complicated interpersonal relationships better. But a single symptom, however characteristic, never validates a diagnosis by itself. Normal has a wide range. Let's give each other some room to be different from one another and still be normal. For today, I would like to leave it at that. If you have any questions, feel free to write to team@pokermind.com. Thank you so much for listening. I hope I poked some minds today. See ya!